Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. And Chris, it is finally here. The summer flew by, and now it's time for football season. We are headed towards week zero.
Yeah, you know, Jim, it doesn't feel like that long ago that I was on this show saying the summer's going to fly by, and before we know it, we're going to be getting into the kickoff for the Nittany Lions. We're only 2 weeks away. College football is only 1 week away, so we have made it successfully, Jim. Congratulations through the hashtag content desert. Now we're into the thick of it. And I always crack up about week zero. It reminds me, I know you're a baseball guy, of when they have that one game or series in some foreign country and they try to convince you the Major League Baseball season has started. Like, no, it starts on American Day when the American pastime is played on American soil. But whatever, I always do tune into those games, and I always tune into week zero. It will not be the same this year without Nebraska losing to one of the worst teams of the Big Ten. But there are some interesting games and plenty to talk about with Penn State season only a week after that.
Well, more than anything, Chris, it's college football. So, yes, we will watch. I don't know why they can't adjust it and call it week one. They have to call it week zero.
No, I'm with the week zero. That is not week one. If the majority of the teams in the top 25 aren't playing, or all of them, frankly, it's not week one. So yeah, week zero is fine.
You're probably right. And I love the baseball analogy, because you're right. I'm a baseball guy. And anytime you're going to talk about those games that they play internationally to start the season, I've got to talk about my Mets. And the hero of one of those series, Benny Agbayani, right? Who, you have to remember him from the Mets, don't you, Chris?
I do. That's an amazing pull, by the way. Benny Agbayani. I'm not a Mets guy, as you know, but I did always like Benny.
Well, let's move on. Let's move on from the Benny Agbayani phase of the show. Let's talk some Penn State football. I'm looking at this week as our season preview week, Chris.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll start talking specifically about West Virginia. This week, teamy overview, season overview. Let's start with the team and with just that overview. Where is this team right now? Who are they?
Well, I think the headline, if I have to pick one for the Nittany Lions, is that they are replacing all three of their coordinators. You could take it a bunch of different ways, but certainly when you have that much turnover in key coaching positions for different reasons, it can go very well. It can go very badly. It can be a mixture. But as we saw, let's say, from the transition from John Donovan to Joe Moorhead, or even from Brent Pry to Manny Diaz, it can be very impactful in how the season goes. And so I think if I have to pick a headline for the 2024 Nittany Lions, it's 3-for-3 on new coordinators.
And we'll get into that a bit later in the show and what effect that has, and also what effect it might have early in the season, you know, before things get settled in with, by the way, it's not a new offense, Chris. We're just tweaking it, okay?
You know, I feel maybe partially responsible for having brought up on a show at one point how much I enjoy trying to read the tea leaves of coaching press conferences, but I think we've gone overboard with it. I understand, because you're alluding to the fact that every time James has been asked about hiring Andy Kotelnicki, he always mentions that 11 years in, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, and we're looking for subtext and deeper meaning, and we're trying to, you know, plumb the depths of these rumors that James Franklin is constantly meddling with the offense. And is this, in fact, a signal that he is once again going to be meddling with Andy Kotelnicki before he's even in the door? I acknowledge that there's a possibility that all of that is true. I think in general in the Penn State media sphere over the last month. And again, I think it's maybe just because we're going stir crazy with no real football to talk about. And we've broken down Abdul Carter's switch to defensive end a half dozen different ways. We've maybe overdone it. It may just be that his point is, as Kotal Nicki said, I think it either Big Ten or Penn State media day. If my language is Trey and yours is trips, we're going to call it trips.
And, you know, here's the by the way, Jim looks at his notes, crosses out the Abdul Carter change to defensive end note.
It's a big story. You do have to talk about it when you talk about the defensive side of the ball. But anybody who is listening to this show, I'm sure, has consumed a lot of it as well as some of the many other fine options out there in the Penn State broadcast / podcast milieu. And you've heard these things many, many times. You've read about them in articles and on message boards. Like, we're just so prepared to have something real to talk about, all of us.
Oh, exactly. But going back to the offense thing, and my take on it is, James, there are certain things, everything he says is so calculated. Sure. And thought out ahead of time. But I'm not sure he realizes when.
Except for the great to elite thing, which I think he regretted the moment he said it and has regretted it for the ensuing 6 years after.
Well, I no doubt he's regretted it for the last 6 years, but I actually think he kind of in his head kind of planned that out, or at least in the moment,
yeah,
thought that was a good way to put it. Hey, we are really good. It's really now being continued, that whole we're great, but we're not elite conversation. He has picked it up with, we're one of the few schools, Chris, where you win 10 games and people aren't satisfied. Hey,
and maybe that's the other headline.
But we welcome that pressure, though.
Yeah, well, and maybe that's the other headline. Pressure on James Franklin, pressure on Penn State to transcend this impression that exists nationally that the ceiling for the program is always the bridesmaid.
Yes, and that leads to the conversation about James Franklin, and we talked about where is the team. My question is, where is James Franklin this year? Because the national narrative, and I believe that matters to James, okay? He reads it, he knows it's out there, and that reaction to, you know, that 10 wins, but we welcome that pressure, that's him reacting to that narrative that James Franklin is one in 123 or something to that effect against top five teams. And he reacts to it, and his reaction, and I do think there's some truth to it. You know, if you have Ohio State in your division that you have to play every year, and the way this Michigan team was the last 3 years, and you have to play those two teams, how many other teams in the country over the last 3 years would have been better than 0-6 against those two teams?
Sure. Yeah. I think the truth, as is so often the case in life, is somewhere in the middle. There are valid criticisms of James Franklin, to be sure, that, you know, whatever it is, the 3-13 against top 10 teams, or maybe the more than that, I don't have the number, 3-22, maybe it's bad. It's really bad. I get it. We're underdogs in those games. You know, you're supposed to lose as an underdog. On the other hand, you're supposed to pull upsets when you're an elite coach more than 3 times out of 25. There's truth in that. There's valid criticisms. There's also a lot fair to be said about the fact that you win your games other than when you go up against two top four, top five teams that happen to be in your division. And those are teams that are going to the playoffs, 14 playoffs, and winning national championships and things like that. So you can make the case either way. I do think, you know, in seeing the unbelievable, to me, just irrational confidence of West Virginia's fan base that they're just going to roll Penn State. Penn State's just a speed bump on their way to the Pitt game. I do think some of it is the national narrative around James has gotten so overblown that they are now swept up in the idea that this guy who had tremendous success at Vanderbilt, quickly rebuilt Penn State out of the ashes of the scandal, and now has us consistently winning 10 games, is just a total clown. And so anytime James Franklin comes to town, that's good news for you and your team because you're about to get a dub. And that hasn't been the case, especially for the last few seasons, unless you have a top five roster that has consistently been recruiting at or above the level of Penn State. And, you know, maybe has had better coaching like we've seen at Michigan, Ohio State, Ole Miss, with the qualifier that half of Penn State's defense wasn't on the field for the Peach Bowl. So, yeah, whether it's fair or not, I mean, life's not fair, but James is under the microscope this year, nationally and certainly from some elements of the fan and booster base. Now, I think internally, he's still pretty strong. I think the administration still believes in him. And unless he turns into a total stinker this season, I'm talking 4 or 5 losses, I don't think that's going to change at all.
And I don't think that 4 or 5 losses is going to happen. And
I hope not.
James Franklin is also a little bit of a victim of some success. By that, I mean his teams a few years ago, remember, they was it 2017 and 18, they were up big on Ohio State in the fourth quarter and found ways to lose.
Yep, not big enough.
Yeah, that's a bad way to lose games. And in the last couple of years where he's been real competitive with Ohio State, even though Ohio State, if you base it on recruiting rankings, has had a much bigger talent advantage over them, he's been very competitive. But what he's up against is Michigan was in the same place as Penn State, essentially, but they found the way to win. Whether it was cheating or just playing Jim Harbaugh's coaching, they found a way to win, and Penn State did not, Chris. And
yeah,
James Franklin,
that's an unflattering comparison, right in the same division. Thankfully, divisions are gone now. Yeah, look, we're going to hear this conversation over and over and over again until Penn State breaks the glass ceiling of a playoff berth. And this is the year to do it.
This is the year they have to do it. I think James Franklin, and we'll get into it. In fact, when we come back, I'm going to ask you not to make your prediction for the season. We'll do that later in the show. But I want to ask you what they need to do to call this a successful season for James Franklin. We'll do that when we come back.
Make your party planning easy for any special event or tailgate with Campus Steaks Catering. We deliver to your office, home, or wherever you host your next party. Or be the talk of the tailgate with something new. Just stop by before the game at our 119 South Pew Street location and your order will be hot and ready. For the best cheesesteak in State College, it's Campus Steaks. Give us a call at 814-954-7447.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. He's Chris Buccinati. I'm Jim Galante. Chris, when we wrapped up quarter number 1, the tease was what would it take for Penn State to have a successful season? And let me phrase it this way. 10-2, not make the playoffs. 10-2, make the playoffs and lose that first game. Is that enough to be considered a successful season?
To me, those are two very different scenarios. I think the simple answer to what makes a successful season for Penn State is make the playoffs. however you do it, make the playoffs. Because, you know, so much of what we define as success or lack thereof in college football, even now as we've been able to quantify it a little bit more with a structured playoff, it's still psychological. I mean, you go back to the 90s and prior when we were picking the national champion out of a hat, basically, with the stupid system that we had. The perception of Penn State as a football program now, 2.5 decades into the 21st century, is still shaped by the decision of a few slovenly Midwestern sports writers who didn't vote with their conference and award a split national title to Penn State in 1994. So a lot of this is based on perception. Now, if we get into the first round of the playoffs and we're not playing a home game and we're on the road at some SEC school and we get drummed out almost as quickly as we were in, and there's no January bowl vacation for our fans to take, is that going to feel a little bit empty? Yeah, it is. But it's still, I think, going to be better than if we're getting ready for the Citrus Bowl because we didn't qualify for the tournament. The brass ring Penn State has been chasing to tell ourselves the story that we are making progress is to qualify for the postseason tournament. So to me, that's the bar you need to clear to have a quote-unquote successful season. And I took a lot of crap from people last year when I said once Penn State lost its second game, on a certain level, that season was a failure. And they said, oh, well, how can you call a 10-win college football season a failure? Well, again, first of all, as we've added, going back to psychology and perception, we still talk about 10 wins in the same way we talk about 1,000 yards rushing in the NFL, even though they're about to play 18 regular season games, right? As we've added games to the regular season, the 10-win threshold is still great. It doesn't mean what it did when you were only playing 10 or 11 regular season games, because the extra game you're adding is against Akron, okay? So, great. I'm not turning up my nose at a 10-win season, but you said in the last segment, this is the year for Penn State to make the playoffs. I still disagree. The year for Penn State to make the playoffs was last year, and we blew it. It was a pass-fail standard for the Nittany Lions last year, and we failed at that. There were 4 playoff spots, and we didn't get one. And so, you know, that has only ratcheted up the pressure now that the number of openings in the postseason tournament has increased. For Penn State to just be able to end a season with its fans saying we were a playoff team.
See, I look at it a bit different. So last year, going into last season, the consensus was Penn State would be a 10-win team and probably lose to Ohio State and Michigan. Now, I think you and I felt that there was enough talent on Penn State's roster and they had been coached up well enough. And this is where I'll do the complimenting of James Franklin. His team was good enough to win at least one of those 2 games.
Penn State was more talented than Ohio State, top to bottom, last season. Yeah, that's what I believe. I think in terms of being a football team, Penn State was a more complete, let's put it that way, a more complete top to bottom football team than Ohio State was last season. That's the first time I have been able to say that in damn near 20 years. And I don't think the talent gap was that wide between Penn State and Michigan either, although Penn State had like some weird black magic going on last season. So that was a totally different deal, the Wolverines, in my opinion, built differently too. Penn State is built to defeat Ohio State, and Penn State could have and should have defeated Ohio State. So I only bring all of this up in the context of this is not forgotten. The echoes of last season's failures are carrying forward into 2024 for the Nittany Lions.
And I believe it's that carryover, Chris, that makes me say if they go 10-2, get into the playoffs, which they would have last year, okay, based on, you know, the national rankings, they would have been in the playoffs. And if they do that this year and lose that first game, what's different? What is different?
The psychology of us being able to say, well, at least we made the playoffs. You feel like you've moved up another rung on the ladder. It's, trust me, it's going to stink. But I assure you, since we're just dealing in hypotheticals here, it would be worse if we don't get in.
Oh, there's no doubt. That's a failure. And that's why I asked the question the way I did about 10
But I don't
two.
Think if you make the playoffs and you lose, again, there are so many variables there. I'm not saying I'm hoping for that. But in terms of how are people going to feel ultimately, they're going to feel like it was, you know, maybe sort of the way they felt. I think people felt pretty good at the end of the 2022 season when we won the Rose Bowl. So maybe that's not fair. I think you got to make the best. That's just my bottom line. You got to make the playoffs.
What I think the difference, and I'm glad you brought up that Rose Bowl season, because you at least felt that beating Utah was a good win.
You ended on a win. It's going to be a very curious dynamic, because I think for the teams that lose their first round playoff game in December on the road, especially, it's going to feel very odd, because you're used to being able to have that postseason exhibition at the end, take a nice little trip to Florida or Texas or somewhere else warm. If you're a Penn State fan up here in the cold Northeast, it's going to feel a little empty. So maybe you're right. Maybe I'm overstating the importance of the postseason berth without the win, but I don't know. Let's show that we can get there first, right?
I think next year, in talking to James Franklin, he, if that were the scenario, he will talk about, we made the playoffs. We're a playoff team.
Sure.
Maybe you are technically, James, but you were no different than you were a year ago. And just let me also add this. I believe a lot of people think 10 wins automatically would get Penn State in the playoffs. I don't think so, Chris. I don't think so. I think there's going to be perhaps even a couple 10-2 teams that don't make the playoffs. And remember, a group of five team is going to make the playoffs, and the winner of the ACC and the Big 12 will also make the playoffs, and they'll do it as a very high seed. You know, they'll be a 3-4 seed. That can bump people even ranked 10th. You know, in the season, you may not make the playoffs.
Correct. Absolutely. And it could get very dicey in terms of comparing regular season resumes. And I think we have seen that there is a pecking order to this thing. And the SEC is sitting at the very top of that pecking order. I do think Penn State is fortunate enough to be able to benefit from a lot of brand equity and the recognition that their fans will travel well and they draw a big audience on television. So that's working in our favor if we get into one of those conversations. But when you're going up against some SEC teams with a similar record, would you feel great about Penn State or really any other non-Michigan or Ohio State Big Ten teams standing in that conversation? I wouldn't.
No, and I also think there's going to be, when you go through this 10-2 tiebreaker, the question's going to be, who did you beat? And if Penn State's 10-2, where are you going to find on their schedule a big win? And I'm thinking, if they're 10-2, they lost to Ohio State, okay?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and listen, I understand people are going to be listening to this and they're saying, oh, Buchanani, like setting the bar so low, you make the playoffs, you don't even have to win a game. You know, maybe people feel this is the soft bigotry of low expectations for the Nittany Lions here. But you could probably hear it in my voice earlier when I was talking about last season. I'm still mad. I am still frustrated about the way that team played. I'm still frustrated about us wasting a generational defense in the last year of mad scientist Manny Diaz. I'm still mad, Jim, that they tricked me into going on this show and going on Obligatory and everywhere else and peddling snake oil to our audience, who I love and respect so much, and trying to trick them into buying into my own delusion about what that team was capable of doing. And I'm done. You got to show me. And so, yeah, this soft bigotry is there because it's real. That's where my expectations are. I'm not saying you got to make the playoff or win a playoff game. I'm saying just make it. Just prove my admittedly low expectations wrong before you get me to get behind a microphone or in front of a camera and start advocating for you, carrying your water, when you've just not shown me anything that gives me a high degree of confidence that it can be done. I get it. Losing to Michigan and Ohio State, great. That reputation James Franklin is battling against, we talked about in the first segment, that is as much about losing to Michigan State in 2017 and 18 and Minnesota in 2019. And I got angry when we lost those games and said, now the guy, it's Missouri. You got to show me. And I'm still waiting. It's 2024. I'm still waiting. So yeah, just get in. Show me you can get in.
Well, I just think getting in is the first step. If you get in at 10-2, I look at it though, Chris, you're not going to play, you know, the winner of the Southeast Conference or the winner of the Big Ten. You then have an opportunity though to win a big game in that first round of the playoffs. To me, that's what I want to see. I want to see them win a game. I'd love it to be a home game, but I want to see them win a game in the playoffs, not just be one of 12. We've seen that for years now, be ranked in the top 12, Chris. All right, that is it for quarter number two. Quarter three, we're going to dive into things on the field, I promise.
Make your party planning easy for any special event or tailgate with Campus Steaks Catering. We deliver to your office, home, or wherever you host your next party. Or be the talk of the tailgate with something new. Just stop by before the game at our 119 South Pew Street location and your order will be hot and ready. For the best cheesesteak in State College, it's Campus Steaks. Give us a call at 814-954-7447.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State's upcoming season. We're doing the preview. Chris, we spent the first two segments really giving the team overview, the coaching perspective. Let's get on to the field. And you had talked about very early on in the show, one of the narratives for this team is going to be new coordinators, offense, defense, special teams. My question is, first of all, did James Franklin get his hires correct? And what effect is it going to have on the field?
Yeah, well, there are different forms of pressure on each one of these guys. I think first and foremost, obviously, the microscope is on Andy Kotelnicki, because the reason why last year's team got me so angry and so many other fans with me and underwhelmed when we expected them to be a team that could make the playoffs, win the Big Ten, even contend for the national championship, hardy har har. The reason none of that happened was because the offense just didn't get the job done on the field. And a lot of that, I think, is correctly attributed to Mike Yurcich and his baffling play calling decisions. So the expectation is that Kotelnicki will be able to come in here and add some spark and excitement and creativity to an offense, increase the number of explosive plays, and continue Drew Aller's development as a former number one quarterback in his recruiting class. So yeah, there's a ton of pressure on Andy Kotelnicki, because his job is to come in and to fix what was so obviously broken. There's pressure on Tom Allen because he's in the complete opposite position. His job is to not break what was clearly in such good shape. And I think the fan base correctly fell in love with Manny Diaz. You can still tell when you hear the players talk about him, even though I think they've taken to Tom Allen. And I liked the hire of Tom Allen very much. They still love Manny Diaz. And everybody knows the results that guy was able to produce. And now Tom Allen is taking over the defense that lost three very good defensive backs, two starting defensive ends, a lot of talent, guys who are playing on Sundays now. Just this past weekend, I saw our guy Daquan Hardy had a very nice playoff game against the, preseason game against the Steelers with the Buffalo Bills. A lot of talent exited to the NFL after last season. And so the pressure is on Tom Allen for there to be not too much of a drop-off. And on Justin Lustig, the special teams coordinator, I kind of look at special teams coaches, Jim, kind of the same way I do municipal elected officials. If anybody knows who you are, that's probably a bad thing. You know, as long as I turn the faucet and the water comes on when I do it, as long as my garbage gets picked up on time, as long as, you know, there aren't cat burglars plaguing my neighborhood, I don't really care. I don't know too much about who my township supervisor or borough councilman is. But if you're in one of those jobs, if you're on the school board and everybody knows your name,
something happened.
That means you did something bad. That means you screwed something up. So Justin Lustig, I think the standard for him is nobody should know that guy's name through the entire season, and he's doing a good job.
Don't be fumbling the punts or the kickoffs. Do not miss field goals inside 40 yards. Do not get your punts blocked. There you go.
Good. And don't give up big returns. Don't yield bad starting field position for Tom Allen, who is just trying to make sure nobody is at midseason saying, the whole thing went to hell as soon as Diaz took the Duke job. By the way, ironically enough, 100% the fault of Texas A&M boosters that happened. Right?
Yes.
Because if they don't spike the Stoops higher, Elko never leaves Duke and that job never comes open.
Exactly it. But that's the way it always works. The rain, butterfly flapping its wings, a world away creates the monsoon that we, or hurricane that we get, Chris. That's the way it works. And that's
how it works in
college
football. I talk about not being willing to go out on a limb and predict great things out of this football team yet. I am relatively comfortable going out on a limb and saying I think the Tom Allen hire was a very good one. I've said over and over again, I think James is the type of coach who needs to benefit from guys with former head coaching experience. That obviously worked out well with Moorhead and Diaz, and I think it will continue with Tom Allen. And I think you have the extra bonus of somebody, and he's talked about this, who has experience in the conference and who knows your team, who scouted your personnel as a divisional opponent every season.
Yes, and he knows the Big Ten. I'm feeling very good about the defense. You mentioned the amount of talent that left. You also got to mention how much talent is returning on the defense. And, I think where the issues are going to be on offense, it's Andy Kotelnicki comes in, and, I mentioned this before, new coordinator, highly thought of, highly regarded. Everybody loves the guy, tells us how creative he's going to be, going to get explosive plays and does all that. Oops, Jim needs to flip the page. That was his notes from a couple years ago from Mike Yurcich, okay? Everybody had that same feeling about Mike Yurcich a couple years ago as they do about Andy Kotelnicki now.
And ironically, in both cases, it's based on their ability to make crappy Big 12 defenses look even worse than they actually are, which is bad.
Yes. So how much of that, is part of the equation? But what I can appreciate is I think that James Franklin and his staff looked at how this offense performed a year ago and identified the issues. I'm not going to be like James Franklin and overplay those last couple games last year after Yurcich was gone. See all the big plays what we had then, Chris? But there's a recognition of what the issue is. And I think Andy Kotelnicki comes in on the same page as James Franklin and the rest of the coaching staff. This is exactly precisely what needs to be fixed. The problem has been identified. Now, can they fix it? But that leads me to the question, Chris, of it's the passing game. I know explosive plays could happen from the running game, but we have two very good running backs that we're pretty confident in. Mm-hmm. They've talked quite a bit about that extra man in the box to stop them last year, and that was part of it. So now when we start the, you know, the passing part of this offense, is it the wide receivers, Chris? Is it the quarterback in big games? Or is it the offensive coordinator? And no fair to just answer all three.
Well, and let's add in the variable of replacing both of your bookend tackles, both of whom are going to be playing on Sundays. You know, ironically enough, the higher draft pick in Olufashinu, just because of the way the Jets roster situation has worked out, he'll be the one of the two who's not starting in all likelihood, but both like really very talented tackles, plus Hunter Norzad, who's also playing in the NFL. You know, you're giving up proven talent off the offensive line at a time where you still have question marks about the quarterback's development, massive question marks about the receiving core. Really, the only two places where you feel totally confident are at tight end, where you know you've got a star in Tyler Warren and you've recruited very well and feel pretty confident about the young talent behind him, and as you mentioned, running back. So where is the biggest question mark? For me, it's got to be the receiving core, because as much as this is going to hinge in all likelihood on Drew Aller's development, we saw him do a lot of good things this year. Kind of like I said earlier, I think the Franklin is a pushover narrative has just spun out of control in the 24/7 online news cycle. I think the Drew Aller stinks narrative has also mutated far beyond where the reality would have it. We also know that we at least have a guy who looks like he could do some damage in what we know of Kotelniki's system, especially as he ran it at Kansas in Bo Perbula. But man, Jim, when you look at what a hot mess the receiving room was last year, guys in wrong position, guys not blocking well, running bad routes, dropping passes, not getting open, I think was one of the big issues that I don't think gets talked about enough. Guys just could not get separation, even against average level defensive back play. We really have no evidence, none, that any of those things are going to be better this season. We just kind of have to take it as an article of faith. And once again, with the track record here over a decade at Penn State under James Franklin, a lot of good things I could talk about. Let me not come across like I'm a critic of the guy or that I want him to leave, but take this as an article of faith are not words that inspire confidence in me whatsoever. So receiver is my number one concern on the whole football team, not just the offense.
I'm with you, Chris, that it is mostly on the wide receivers. Yeah, every year I come back thinking it will be better this year, partly because it can't be worse. And this may be an awful analogy, but there's an old movie I watch where husband and wife, they're shopping for a home and the realtor is showing them a house. And while they're looking at it, this little plane starts sputtering and ends up crashing into the house that they were looking at. Instantly, the husband says, "We'll take it." Wife looks at him, "Well, why? Hey, what are the chances of that happening twice?" Kind of like, what are the chances of that disaster we saw last year happen again? Just randomly, by happen chance, it's got to be better. Not saying it's going to be great, Chris, but doesn't it have to be better than a year ago? Jim, again, checks notes from last season when he said the exact same thing. But
yeah, precisely, right? You know, I've already, for the savvy listeners, I've already quoted George W. Bush once on this show, so let me do it twice. You know, I was saying in Texas, "Fool me once, shame on you." You can't get fooled again. And that's me. I'm not going to get fooled. I'm not going to get fooled again. Yes, it could be as bad or worse, potentially. And I am not going to get behind a microphone or on a camera and promise anybody that it's going to be, because they'd know and I would know that I was lying.
You know what, Chris?
I said I was confident about that.
I'm going to fall for it again. And that's, you know, I'm saying it with my heart, not with my head. But I'm falling into the.
I have some glass half full comments I can make on the other side of the break about that. I'm being too negative today.
All right. Well, let's get to those glass half full comments right after this message.
Make your party planning easy for any special event or tailgate with Campus Steaks Catering. We deliver it to your office, home, or wherever you host your next party. Or be the talk of the tailgate with something new. Just stop by before the game at our 119 South Pew Street location, and your order will be hot and ready. For the best cheesesteak in State College, it's Campus Steaks. Give us a call at 814-954-7447.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We are going to do something really, 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 really different this segment. We're going to start with Chris doing the glass half full thing. That's what you teased at the end of quarter three, Chris. Let's hear it. Give me the half full wide receiver situation.
I will. And is it possible, Jim? I'm thinking about it. I'm like, am I really this down on this year's team? I'm kind of down on them. I am, for sure. Am I this down? Am I just sort of, is this an emotional coping mechanism that I'm just trying to like build, you know, some preemptive strike armor against the what I view as the inevitable disappointment? Like, yeah, maybe. Am I trying to do some kind of reverse jinx thing where I talk down the team and then they prove me wrong? Absolutely. But If I want to talk about positives, I think we can all agree that when you saw Trey Wallace on the field last year, he looked very much like the NFL prospect the scouts tell us that he is, right? He was not just prolific. He did some really nice things athletically. He went up and caught the football with his hands. And what I'm saying, I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I mean, some people catch a football with their body. Some people look it into their hands and use their hands to catch a football. Trey Wallace does that. He can win those contested catch situations. He has the skill set to be a legit number one. The problem with Trey Wallace was not that he underperformed the way some of his cohorts in the receiver room did. He just couldn't stay healthy. And so if the guy can be on the field, there's no question he massively upgrades what you can do at receiver. I don't want to overstate Julian Fleming's arrival like he's some great, you know, conquering hero or long-awaited savior, but I do think he's going to be an upgrade over what we had last season. And it should be a solid number two and potentially somebody you could move around and create mismatches in the slot. I think we have heard good things. James has shouted out Liam Clifford's development. And I thought Clifford showed some good things last year. I don't know that he was used particularly well. And you go back to those last couple of games, which I agree, we don't want to overemphasize too much, but you did see the offense change noticeably. Clearly, once you had somebody who said like, hey, you know, maybe Omari Evans doesn't have this huge route tree, but he can do one thing and he can do it well. Let's have him do it. Let's send him on fly patterns down the field and just let him try to beat slower defenders down the field. I think Andy Kotelnicki appears to be a smart enough chap to understand he can use him that way. And Caden Saunders too, Tysier Denmark. There are guys who have the ability. So it's not written in stone that this group is going to underperform. I just, like I said, can't take it as an article of faith at this point.
I'm with you. We, you know, the show me thing, we've got to see it there first. But with that said, now here's my positive spin is I'm with you. Trey Wallace has shown all the traits to be a primary number one, very, very good NFL type receiver. He's got all the tools to do that. Got to stay healthy, obviously. But the question then becomes, who else can there be? And as I said, I think just the recognition of what was wrong will help them going forward, that, okay, this is the exact issue we're going to fix. And I have like zero doubt, James Franklin has pretty much just confirmed this. There were issues with Mike Yurcich. Mike Yurcich was not on the same page with James Franklin and the rest of the coaching staff. That was even, it could be Mike Yurcich was right and all of them were wrong. Doesn't matter. They weren't on the same page. And I think they needed to make a change there. So I'm hopeful that that will be part of the solution also. So keep your fingers crossed on that. Any other, you mentioned the offensive line, Chris. The you don't just replace two NFL tackles and an NFL center without some repercussions, but it just does feel that the offensive line over the last couple of years with Phil Troutwine, it has turned the corner where you feel like there's enough depth there, enough possibilities there, that it doesn't mean they'll be as good as last year. It doesn't mean they'll be the next Olu out there. But I'm fairly confident it won't be a disaster either.
I'm going to be very cautious with my words here, Jim, because as I said, I don't believe in jinxes, but I don't want to jinx it. I do have to say, I have been very impressed and pleasantly surprised with Phil Troutwine as both a recruiter and developer of talent on the offensive line. I really liked the fact that we brought in a guy from Boston College where he had obviously had a lot of success developing just tough, nasty O-linemen. It's tough to recruit there, difficult to recruit at Boston College. And so it's not like he's pulling the cream of the crop from across the country. And he was sending guys to the pros. Good, solid NFL players were coming out of that program while Phil Troutwine was there. And again, you're seeing him repeat that success at Penn State. And now, as I alluded to, he's got access to a much deeper well of talent on the recruiting trail. And so his ability to get that talent to Happy Valley, and then the hard part, really, especially for O-line recruiting, probably the toughest position to project from high school to the college level, he's done an admirable job of developing it. So he has almost reached the point, Jim, where even at Penn State, where I've joked for decades that we have good offensive lines like presidential elections, one every 4 years, I think he's on the cusp of earning the benefit of the doubt.
Yes, I think he has earned that. And I think there's, you know, enough talent coming back. There's enough talent coming up. We're seeing the recruiting. All things point upward for the offensive line. Let me go back, though, Chris. Last question on the offensive coordinator. And question is, what do you want to see from him? We want to see more explosive plays. I know that. Tell me, how is he going to use the players differently? What do you need to see from him?
Well, really, the number one thing I am looking for from Andy Kotelnicki is to whatever he does schematically, I want him to feature Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. Those are our two best players on offense. As we've discussed prior, they are going to be enshrined in the pantheon of greatest tailback tandems in Penn State history. And I, you know, if you look at his offense, for all it has this reputation for explosivity and creativity and unorthodox formations and plays, it really is old school in the sense that it's predicated on the run. And so what I just want from Andy is to make Nick Singleton look like Nick Singleton again on a regular basis, and for Catron Allen to continue doing Catron Allen things.
I'm in agreement. And I think what that means, or part of it will be, I want to see them pass the ball to the wide receivers. What that means, though, is it gets them out in the flat, gets them one-on-one with somebody. Maybe it's a wheel route out of the backfield. Maybe it's like in the Michigan State game where Nick Singleton lines up as a wide receiver and Tyler Warren just absolutely buries a defender, and next thing you know, Nick Singleton is sprinting down the field. That's what I want to see, and I want to see that as part of the running game. If it means, you know, the outside read option versus the inside read option, so that, you know, if he breaks, he goes on forever, uses speed, that kind of thing. That's what I want to see. How they use the running backs. But you can't talk about this offense, Chris, without asking the question, how do you want them to use Bo Perbula? We keep hearing there's going to be a package. You know what? Every year we always hear this things like that about the backup quarterback. What do you want to see them do with Bo Perbula?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Nothing. I would like to live in the fantasy world where Penn State has 11 players that are good enough on offense at the positions at which they were recruited that the backup quarterback doesn't play until we're beating the opponent by 3 or 4 touchdowns. I like Bo. I like what he showed us. I don't have this fetishistic obsession with him getting into the game. I understand Kodo Nicky does some things, which I actually do like. I've got a soft spot for goofy offensive creativity where he gets two quarterbacks on the field at the same time. Again, was a lot of that a function of the fact that Buffalo and Kansas did not have elite level talent? Maybe. That's fine. But honestly, in my perfect world, we don't see a whole lot of Bo Perbula because we feel like we've got a number one quarterback. And when you've got a number one QB, you don't take him off the field for any reason at any time.
I'm with you on that too, Chris, because it does whenever. And I do think Bo Perbula is a really good player in a lot of ways. We don't know yet how good a passer he is. Okay. We don't. And you and I were together the other day and I mentioned, out of just plain curiosity, I would love to see what a Penn State offense looks like with Bo Perbula as the quarterback.
I will say this, given Bo's mobility and his threat to throw the ball, and honestly, just the knowledge that Andy Kotelnicki's a guy who can figure out a way to make all of those pieces fit together, his presence on the field can stress a defense. So if there is a package there that puts him on the field, if for no other reason than to give defenders another thing to worry about in the split seconds between the snap of the ball and the execution of the play, you know, that I'm open to. But in general, again, I would like to exist in the fantasy world where we've just got our best 11 on the field, and that doesn't include the backup quarterback.
Well, I'll throw in one last thing because our listeners probably think I'm contractually obligated to say this. We had an off season where it didn't come up that often, but I will bring it up now. Even if it's Drew Aller and you run a read option where one of the options is for the quarterback to keep the ball, Drew Aller, keep the ball once in a while. Just present the threat that you might do that. All right. We talked all offense. Guess what? Chris is going to be back for another show. Our next show this week, we'll actually talk about the defense on that show. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today, though. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Make your party planning easy for any special event or tailgate with Campus Steaks Catering. We deliver to your office, home, or wherever you host your next party. Or be the talk of the tailgate with something new. Just stop by before the game at our 119 South Pew Street location, and your order will be hot and ready. For the best cheesesteak in State College, it's Campus Steaks. Give us a call at 814-954-7447.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Ray Hall Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com.